Welcome to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and I'm joined by Seth Weintraub. How are you, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Awesome. Yeah, we have a huge week this week because it was kind of a historic week, if you don't put it like that. I think Tesla actually used the word historic this week for the EV world because of they think that it's the first quarter of... Well, it was the first quarter in 2 years that they turned a profit, which is historic on its own, but it's not historic because it happened before. But now they think it's going to be the first quarter that they're going to be able to sustain profitability going forward indefinitely. There's some caveats, like if there's they need to repay some big loan for a quarter, they could have such a big payment that they could bring them back in the red again.
And one's but coming. One of those is coming in January, so... You know,
yeah, that's
so grain of salt. But they said, you know, they'd still expect to kind of break even in January. So,
yeah, they did say that. But that would be something else because now it basically undoes the whole short thesis that Tesla is not sustainable. They cannot make money manufacturing cars, and they were saying that about the Model S and X, even though they were able to deliver some pretty significant gross margin. But they said, yeah, but that's a $100,000 car. They won't be able to do that with the Model 3, which is a $35,000 car. Now the Model 3 is not yet a $35,000 car. But that's another big news this week that,
we did cover that last week.
That came out last week. But the news about that, and we're talking about, of course, about the new mid-range battery pack of the Model 3 that was released last week. It was announced last week. Now, this week, it went up in price. So, of course, the goal of that pack was to reduce the price of the Model 3, which when they announced it was $45,000. Now it went up to $46,000 without much of an explanation from Tesla, just that they do price adjustment all the time. All the time, sure, but not right after announcing a new product.
I guess that means get in early next time, right?
Like as soon as because they are respecting the first price. So if you did get that order for the first, I don't know, what was it, like
24
hours,
something. Yeah.
No, it was a little bit more than 24 hours, but yeah, for the first few days, you get the car at $45,000. I mean, the main feature of that car, no, I mean, it's a Model 3. The main feature of the new trim of the Model 3 was the price, and they weren't set on that either. So that wasn't great from Tesla. But yeah, first of all, let's go back to the earnings, which was of course the massive news this week. Record revenues of $6.8 billion, most of it coming from, of course, their automotive business. That was a $6 billion revenue, but we knew that was coming because we knew that Tesla delivered a record numbers of vehicles during the quarter. Was it 86,000 vehicles, something like that? But the real surprise was the earnings, which Wall Street was expecting a loss of 53 cents per share. They came in with a profit of 175 per share, which adds up to $312 million, if you account with the GAAP reporting. Non-GAAP, they account for it at $500 million. Which, I mean, we all knew that. We've been following, of course, Tesla's Q3 very closely. We've been following the production ramp. We knew that things were going fairly well. And we also suspected that profit could be good because they weren't investing much on the production ramp up. So we suspected that they were instead investing on production efficiency, which would have increased the gross margin. But even with all our everything that we knew, still was a big surprise that they were able to deliver that much profit in the last 3 months. Did you agree with that, Seth?
Yeah.
You were a little bit less surprised, I think, than me for some reason.
Well, so, I mean, that's always been the idea, like, the profit margin would be in the 20s. You know, like, were they going to hit it right this quarter? I don't think anybody really expected that. But, you know, I don't think... You know, on a high level, when you're looking at Tesla, like there's not like Elon certainly kind of inflames like these ideas that you can make a profit, and you know, like the battery powered car works. But like all these things are, you know, like if you want to go, you know, in Elon speak, it's all first principles. Like there's really nothing surprising about building a battery car, having it be very fast, having it, you know, cost this much money. I don't know. It's just, to me, it seems like it's not, none of this is surprising really in a larger sense.
Yeah, I get what you mean, but I still think like with if we go to the actual numbers here, you briefly touched about the gross margin of the Model 3. If you look at like on a quarter-to-quarter basis, like last quarter was a 5%, I think they reported 5% gross margin on Model 3, and they were aiming for 15 this quarter, which was already a big like big increase in just 3 months. Like a threefold increase in gross margin. They hit 20% or over 20%, they reported actually. So both in, if you account for GAAP accounting or non-GAAP.
But I mean, you know, last quarter they were building tents and doing all kinds of crazy things to get the numbers up. They didn't really, the CapEx kind of stuff, I mean, I don't know how you account, you know, what your accounting method is, but they didn't really do anything besides efficiency stuff, and they got, I think they said 30%, the price per car was like 30%
was the labor hours that went down.
The labor hours, which is like 98% of the cost of cars. So, you know, the variable cost. So, like, getting that down is, it's not 90%, it's probably 50%, but still getting it down is a huge deal, and
3 months, in 3 months too. That's what is the most impressive.
In 3 months, but I mean, you got to remember, last month was crazy time. Like they were building tents and doing the stuff outside, and you know, they were just kind of ramping up from like almost nothing to, you know, big numbers. And last month it was kind of just like, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there, but you know, clearly that stuff pays off.
Yeah, that's the thing too, right? Because last quarter was not really a ramp up. I mean, they were between 4,000 and 5,000 throughout the whole quarter. So it was more about maintaining that that production rate. The first time that they hit 5,000 was in Q2, at the very last week of Q2. So that was like a big push that they did. Third quarter was more about maintaining the production rate. And we just reported earlier today against our weekly production rate now in Q4. And it looks like they are again maintaining production more than anything in Q4. So it's not about a ramp up yet, even though a ramp up is supposed to come. I mean, we're expecting a production ramp up in Q4. We haven't seen any evidence of that yet a month into the quarter. So we're still keeping a close eye on that. But Tesla is also saying that they are aiming for more cost improvement on the Model 3 during the fourth quarter. And that comes... So we've been talking about gross margin, but another thing that helped that we've been talking about production efficiency, improving the gross margin on Model 3, but that's just one aspect that they improved the Model 3, of course, the gross margin, was the fact that the mix of cells with the introduction of the all-wheel drive and the production performance version of the Model 3 increased the average cell price, of course, a lot. That certainly helped. But now in Q4, you have the mid-range that comes in, which is going to reduce. I mean, they're supposed to deliver the car by the end of the year. So, assuming that they do, it should affect the average sell price of the car. But Tesla doesn't think it's going to affect the gross margin because of what we just explained, the fact that they are still aiming to make efficiency improvements during the quarter. So, that's really exciting. But if we look just at the deliveries of the Model 3, Tesla now claims that it's the best-selling vehicle in the U.S. in terms of revenues, and the fifth best-selling cars in terms of volume. So we're talking about they are only behind in terms of cars. So of course in the U.S. trucks are still a big sellers, but if we just talk about cars, the only vehicles that are beating the Model 3, which again had an average sell price of like $60,000 last quarter, it's only beaten in terms of revenue by the Camry, the Civic, the Accord, and the Corolla. That's the only four cars that deliver more in the U.S. last quarter, which is impressive. And of course, since it's a $60,000 car, if you put that in terms of revenues, of revenue than the Mobile 3 beats the malt.
By a lot.
By a lot,
yeah. I mean, you look at the red bar on the left graph behind mm-hmm. you, and it's like a monster change. And like the most important thing to remember there is that Tesla is not even close to meeting the demand, right? So, if these were actually on the lot and people could get them and actually go see them, and, you know, now people are just starting to drive them, it's not even going to be close.
Yeah, that's just the U.S. International expansion are coming, and also other version of the cars will increase them, and for sure, including in the U.S., mainly, of course, the 35,000 version of the car with the standard battery pack. We got a new timeline during the earnings conference call about it. So Elon admitted that because a bunch of people asked, like, why even release the mid-range one? And Elon explained that their goal is to release the least expensive possible vehicle that they can. And right now, the least expensive that they can do is the mid-range Model 3 at $46,000.
And you should mention that you're exclusive on the pack size at 62 kilowatts.
Yeah, we're going to get into that for sure. But in terms of the timeline of the new one, the $35,000 one, it's the announcing that within 6 months, it's going to be delivered.
Which technically isn't terribly different than what they said before. Before it was 4 to 6 months, although mm-hmm. it's always been 4 to 6 months out. Like, it's never getting any closer. But, you know, like, it's unlikely that we'll see it by the end of the year. And it's starting to look like toward the middle of next year.
The year is done, really. It's not.
Right. You only have 3 months left.
I mean, even the mid-range now, we're thinking like it's going to be very close to the end of the year, the first deliveries.
Yeah.
So I think the standard one is gone. So, I mean, at this point, you're looking more at like end of Q1, starting of Q2.
Right. And so we're starting to wonder if that's going to even hit, you know, if the federal tax credit wears out, if that's going to even hit the 37.5, or it's going to actually be, you know.
Is it? 2 quarters or 1 quarter per change?
Now, 2 quarters per month. Change.
Okay, so it's it, if it's what even if it's in Q2, you still get the 37.50, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's what I was thinking.
So hopefully some of those will come due then. So that, you know, and there's a ton of state incentives. I mean, New York has 2,000, California is 2,500. But so that'll make a $28,500 car for New Yorkers, you know, if you get the base trim and if you can get it in quarter two.
Yeah. And even then, I don't think many people are going to buy the car at $35,000. I mean, it's even there's not that many options to get, really. Like, unless everyone's going to end up with a black Model 3.
Well, the glass roof is, you know, quite nice. The stereo is amazing.
But that's the thing, though. Those things are supposedly just for the $5,000 premium interior, which no one is talking about anymore. But that's still, like, even for the mid-range one at $46,000 now,
yeah.
That includes... So we cannot just assess the price of the battery pack, the difference in the battery pack, which, as you said earlier, we're going to get into that, but there's a 12 kilowatt hour difference with the long range. You cannot just assess the price difference with that. Of course, now also Tesla made the all-wheel drive only standard on the long range pack, but you also have that $5,000 premium, and we don't even know for sure what's that interior is going to be like what's going to be difference. We heard that the glass roof is going to be part of that deal. At least it was at the very beginning. It was part of the package.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what else? Like, there was mention of premium materials in the inside, but I mean, people have been bitching about the material in the interior of Model 3, with the premium interior. So
maybe they'll bring back the Alcantara.
It's gonna be just for the premium now, and yeah. Yeah, you're gonna have 100,000 Model 3 owners are gonna be quite pissed about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so timeline for the. 35,000 Model 3 with standard battery pack now within the next 6 months. Also got a few updates for internal expansion. For Europe, they're planning to open the books by the end of the year. So within the next 2 months, you should be able to place your order if you're a reservation holder in Europe. And the deliveries, they are planning to make batches. So of course, the Model 3 is produced by batches, like Model S and X for the European market. They are planning a large batch in January to be produced. So they expect the first deliveries in Europe to be February and March. In terms of right-hand drive markets like the UK and Australia, that's going to be mid-2019, they expect. Asia-Pacific for non-right-hand drive, well, left-hand drive market, really, regular markets, they are aiming for maybe end of Q1, certainly Q2. So for all our European readers and listeners, you have a much clearer timeline right now. That we already covered. We shouldn't get on the subject of the mid-range right away. So yeah, we posted this report when we did that, like, yesterday. We got a source, reliable source, familiar with the production at Tesla, that confirmed that the company has the first half dozen mid-range Model 3s produced. And the information inside the firmware of that vehicle indicate that the packs are 62 kilowatt hours in energy capacity. That's full energy capacity.
And that's what we kind of guessed at last week.
Yeah, we said about between 60 and 65, I think you said. You were right on the money. Yes, so there's been some confusion about the energy capacity of the Model 3 with the long-range battery pack because of the EPA that I think on the EPA document it says like 80-something. But Tesla has often said that that's based on the test cycle of the EPA and that it doesn't it's not consistent with the result normally. It's been the case for a few times for the Model S and X2. If you look in the vehicle firmware, you're going to get a 74 kilowatt hours of full usable capacity. Full capacity usable. I think it's 71, something like that. And so comparing apple to apple, we look in the firmware, same thing for the mid-range Model 3. You get 62.59. So that makes a lot more sense. And like we reported last week, the architecture of the pack stays the same. You still have the four modules. You just have fewer cells per modules. So the energy capacity is reduced. The weight is a little bit reduced. No, not by as much as you would with a different module architecture, since you lose some efficiency there by just having more space inside those modules, which is not great. But either way, that's a new there's a new energy capacity of the mid-range vehicle.
And
now, of course,
and Tesla's already said that they're going to have a totally different battery pack for the $35,000 version. So instead of just, you know, removing some cells from removing some more cells from the current pack, they're going to redesign the pack, which actually might be kind of interesting because that gives them some more room. I mean, you know, the pack will be 50% smaller theoretically than the current pack. You know,
I think it's not the pack that they're designing though. It's really the modules themselves, because the pack will stay the same dimension, I think.
Really? Will the batteries be, you know, less dense? Is like, because, you know, it's going from 75 to 50 kilowatt hours.
I mean, the external of the pack stays the same. That's what I meant. Just like when the have made improvement to the Model S and X battery packs, but they still need to remain with the same external, not to change everything else that comes with the subframe of the car. So in terms of the standard battery for the Model 3, they want the same battery pack, but what they said is that they came up with a new battery module designs. And so that battery module is going to be designed to, of course, have fewer cells. No, I don't know how that fits into the design of the existing battery pack, but that's apparently the efficiency improvement is going to be at the battery module.
So it won't be any smaller, you're saying, from the, you know, on the outside.
Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to happen. Like, but they said that the battery module themselves are going to be lighter, regardless of the cells. So it sounds like the efficiency improvement at the battery module level. So you have the pack level, you have the module level, and you have the cell level. We haven't heard anything different about the cells. I think it's going to be the same cells as the long-range one, just like the mid-range one.
Right.
But we have a lot of sources at Tesla, but we don't have yet the details on the new battery modules and how it's going to be different.
We know it's going to weigh a lot less. So it's
definitely, oh, yeah, for sure.
So, like, is it going to be, I mean, it sounds like it's either going to be empty space inside the same size pack, or it's going to be a smaller pack. And if it is a smaller pack, you know, if they change the module dimensions, then they can either make it thinner, you know, like they could, you know, put the module, you know, the battery sideways or whatever, or they could, you know, like maybe the space underneath where your feet go, they could, you know, empty that out and, you know, actually the car would go down a little bit lower. So, you know, maybe you'd have more room. Both of those things are interesting. And also it lightens the car by quite a bit. I think we were thinking like around 500 pounds going from 75 kilowatt hours to 500 kilowatt hours. So that's like, you know, two or three people, like it's going from a full car to just you. You know, that's kind of a big speed improvement. Assuming you have the same power going to the motor, which I don't think is a given. Because when you lower the pack size, you also lower the amount of power you can put out.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Tesla did release the weight of the car originally, but that was like in July 2017. And now we know for a fact that the design of the standard battery pack is not the same as evolved since. So that it's not worth much in terms of information for us. Model Y, we got a few updates for the Model Y too this week, especially when the conference call. Elon Musk confirmed that, did he say last week? Recently, I don't know if it was last week, but in the recent weeks, he approved the Model Y prototype, which we see a picture of, and while it's not, it's a teaser image. He approved the prototype for production. Now, not sure exactly what that means, because it can mean pretty different things. Because if we remember when we followed the Model 3 program for Tesla, so the car was approved for production, but then they unveiled an alpha prototype, and then they went into some release candidates, and the design evolved a lot within the release candidate. And of course, Tesla also said the car was designed for production. So I don't know, maybe they got it closer to a production model with this one, since they're moving for production based on the prototype months before the unveiling.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, at least there's a prototype, you know, running around. Like, at least it sounds like there's something built. So that's good. But it still sounds like a ways off. And I think the launch is still set for March of next year.
Yeah, that's us seeing the prototype, I think. But he did reiterate that it's still aiming for 2020 for the Model Y. Last time Elon said that, he said late 2020, maybe even 2021. So maybe they are like more optimistic now about the timeline for the Model 3, Model Y, excuse me. So, and if you guys don't know about the Model Y, we haven't really talked about the car much, but it's supposed to be a much like what the Model X is to the Model S, Model Y is to Model 3, which means a more affordable mid-size car. But this one is more like a crossover, so it's going to be a little bit higher. It's going to have a hatch, which, of course, is one of the big complaints about the Model 3. It's supposed to have Falcon Wing doors like the Model X, but last time Elon said that was in 2015.
Yeah, so I was going to say that was a long time ago.
Things, yeah, planes change. And when
there's been a couple teaser images. One was on your screen before, and we've seen one from the side. It kind of looks like a, you know, a pickup truck front, which is a good segue into, you know, Elon on the call was like, yeah, the Model Y is production ready and whatever. But well, you know, yeah, I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited about the truck.
Yeah, that's the second time he says that. But coming back to the Model Y, it was sort of a, like a nonchalant comment. Like, it was like, like a sidebar,
yeah.
basically.
It's like, yeah, it's coming, it's coming.
Yeah, because he was talking about the product roadmap, basically, and said, by the way, Model Y is progressing.
But the semi, or the, sorry, the pickup sounds like something special.
Yeah, and when he said that, because I was on the call, Tesla even called me to be on the call, by the way.
I know.
Said, be on the call, dial in, we're going to let you ask some questions. I mean, it was the second time in a row that I was invited on the call, but the second time in a row that I didn't get called on. And sure enough, he didn't call on me this time either. But when he said that, my first thing I want to ask him, because it's the second time he says within all the product and Tesla's roadmap, the pickup truck is his favorite. Like the second time saying that, no one is asking why is it your favorite. Like this, I mean, you could think just on a market basis, there's a lot of opportunity there because it's a very extremely popular segment on,
especially in the U.S.
In the U.S., so it might be just on the term of like an opportunity for Tesla, but looks like he's excited. Like on a technical basis, like what they did with the car, with the prototype, or even if they have a prototype.
Didn't he say something about being able to, you know, the suspension, like it would be like a car and then it would pop up like a truck just using the air suspension?
Yeah, that's something he said back in 2013.
2013, wow. That was...
What? He just came back from, like a San Francisco to Los Angeles trip in a... I think it was an F-150, if I remember correctly. And he said, like, it was empty on the way back. And the suspension wasn't optimized to be empty. So he was talking, like, if we do make a pickup truck, I want an air suspension that is dynamic to adapt between the load in the truck so that it's always optimized for the weight of the vehicle, which can, of course, change a lot when you have a working truck. I wanted to come up with the Model Y, our poll about the Model Y having Falcon Wing door, because last time we did that was like 2 years ago, and I was surprised to see that most people don't want the Falcon Wing doors on the Model Y. But on my tablet here, I cannot open the poll for some reason. I don't know if you can see it. It's on my what to expect with the Tesla Model Y post.
I've got a lot of tabs.
Huh?
I got a lot of tabs open. Hold on a second.
Yeah, but it's not in the it wasn't in the notes for the podcast because it's from last week. But I it's linked in all my Model Y posts, of course, of this week with everything that we learned. I'm curious to see if it's still a no that it is leading. Pretty sure it is for some reason. People don't want it. They think it's like adding complications.
It does add complexity, and like it delayed the launch of the Model X for quite some mm-hmm. time and caused a lot of headaches at the beginning.
And people think it's less reliable too. But my point on it is that I think like recently it seems to be going very well with the Falcon Wings doors. I mean, did you have any issue with yours? I mean, yours are going fine. Tesla nailed it at some point. Like they learned from it, and now they learned from their mistakes with the Model X, and they're gonna apply that to the Model Y, I think, if it's still in the plans. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I actually really like the that one Lincoln, I believe, concept where the doors are the whole, the front and the back.
Mm-hmm.
I think
mm-hmm.
that would be a kind of a cool thing to do. Like you know, you can get in the back seat or the front seats, one door opens, one door closes.
Yeah,
that would be super cool, but it's gonna come. You know, that's not going to be cheap to do that. So, it's a trade-off, I guess. I mean, mm-hmm. like, it would be super cool, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. But, yeah, we still have other news about the Model Y. So, he said 2020 again. So, he said 2020, that's for the product in the market. Presumably, the product's going to hit the market in the U.S. first, as it usually does for Tesla. But now the question remains, where is that car going to be produced? Because if it's in 20... People were, of course, speculating that there's going to be a new factory for it, because Elon talked about the Model Y launching a manufacturing revolution, and the car is going to be even more designed for production than the Model 3. It's going to have more efficiency in the process. We've talked recently about Tesla patenting a new cable technology for wire harness so that the robot can more efficiently manipulate cables, which is, of course, something that's very labor-intensive in the vehicle productions. So there's a lot of things like that, like, oh, it's going to be a new factory specially designed to produce a Model Y. But now if he says that it's 2020, so it's like 2 years away, less than 2 years away, I don't see a new factory being built within 2 years. I mean, so that's another question. Did you have the article up?
Yeah, so I was actually just looking at the Falcon Wing door survey.
Well, check this one first, but then check the one about the factory too, where it's going to be built.
All right, so 60% said no on the model wing doors. Mm-hmm. 26.6 said yes, and 13.5 said no. I don't care.
Okay.
And then what is the other one?
The other one on top. Is it on top? I think. Yeah. For where do you think the Tesla will build the Model Y?
All right. Number one is Gigafactory 1 in Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, and that's at 47.6%. Number two at 16.74% is a new U.S. factory. 14.818% say somewhere else. And Fremont is at fourth place at 11.76.
Yeah, I think Fremont is not a possibility because, I mean, with the Model 3 ramp up, which is supposed to go up to 10,000 in Fremont, I think it'd be very difficult for Tesla to produce anything else at that point. I do think the Gigafactory 1 makes the most sense, really, because Model Y is supposed to share a lot of components with the Model 3, especially the battery pack and the drive units, both of which are already been produced at Gigafactory 1. So, I mean, you already have the powertrain being produced there. Might as well produce the rest of the car. There's a ton of place at the Gigafactory 1, supposed to be for battery cell and battery pack production mainly, but we know that Tesla already been willing to introduce other components at the plant, like I just said, the drive units. So, I mean, it's a big investment, it's a big difference, but I think that's what makes the most sense at this point. Of course, the other thing that we learned is there was a bunch of Gigafactory 3 news this week. Let me get into that in a second. But the land grading started at the plant. So there was a report from China. We reported last week that Tesla secured the land for the factory. Now what they did is that land grading already started at the location. They poured some concrete for a few like mobile offices and a tent there. And Tesla, of course, also said that they were accelerating the construction plan. So it looks like construction basically already started. And the other thing that we learned is that based on the environmental assessment report that was ordered for the project, in that report, Tesla mentioned that they plan to produce both the Model 3 and the Model Y at the factory. So it's officially the first confirmed location to produce the Model Y in China. That said, Tesla repeatedly said that they don't plan to export vehicles from that Gigafactory 3 in China. It's going to be only for local demand. So it's not like your U.S. Model Y is going to come from Gigafactory 3 in China.
Yeah, and they also mentioned that the Model 3 and the Model Y would be built on the continent where they would be sold. So I think there's going to be a European factory and a U.S. factory
at some point, yeah. Because in the meantime, they do gonna export from the U.S. still. I mean, Tesla confirmed that China is gonna get some Model 3 from the U.S. and of course, same thing for Europe.
And then, as an intermediate step to perhaps bypass some of the Chinese tariffs, which could be whatever, at that point. But
40%,
yeah. They're going to do final assembly there, which is something they already do a little bit of in Europe. So to bypass some of the tariffs, they're going to have some sort of last bit of assembly happening there.
Yeah, well, that's an assumption that we're making. Well, what Tesla exactly said was just, but I mean, it's a safe assumption for sure. But what Tesla said was it was some portion of Model 3 production that's going to be in China as soon as next year. So, of course, that's fast as hell because
it's hard to believe when we're looking at, you know,
the picture,
some farmland that's got tracks on it, you know.
So yeah, some land grading, that's it. So there's going to be production there next year. But like you said, the way we are interpreting this, and it's not confirmed by Tesla, but what it sounds like is that Tesla is going to aim to establish as soon as possible the lowest production step, like the number of steps minimum that they need to meet some regulatory standard for the car to be considered to be made in China, so that they can go around those tariffs. Like you said, there's something similar that they're doing in Tilburg for some European markets, not all of them, but a few of them. So that could work. Hopefully it does, because that 40% tariff on the Chinese market is killing them right now.
Yeah, and it's going to be even worse on lower price cars, because the higher price cars are getting bought by people who have quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
But the low price cars are going to be for that huge Chinese middle class.
Hence why they're only talking about making the Model 3 and Model Y right now, the new factory. There's no talk about making the Model S or X. Looks like that if the Chinese markets still want those cars, they're going to have to buy them from the US. Well, Tesla's going to still export them for them, but it's going to be a little bit more difficult. Going back to Tesla. Well, we're still talking about Tesla, but talking about the product, we're going to move to the product. There's an update coming. Well, it started being released this week. It's called the 2018.42. It's being tentatively released through a first wave of, I think it's 1,000 Model S, 1,000 Model X, and 1,000 Model 3. So just a first wave of car. And it includes the Navigate on Autopilot feature, which was omitted from the first version of V9 earlier this month. We've talked about the feature extensively. It's supposed to sort of automate the whole on-ramp, off-ramp that Tesla was promising on their enhanced Autopilot, which didn't come for the last 2 years. The main part about the feature was the fact that it could automatically do the lane change. So now you can do a tow lane change with auto steer on previous version of the Autopilot, but you have to initiate them with the blinkers talk. So you start the lane change and then the car moves by itself. What Navigate on Autopilot was promising is that it will do them by themselves. So not Tesla use all 8 cameras around the car, so they can see the car coming from the back, so they could safely do a lane change and know if they're going to hit something in your blind spot or anything like that. So that was great. It was in the early access version of the car for a while, or at least it was an option, so the driver could decide if either way this new system was going to suggest a lane change if you had a destination in your navigation system. So that lane change could be suggested, for example, if you have a cruise control speed set at a certain limit and a car in front of you is not going at that limit, so you can overtake them. So the car would itself look on the side, make sure that it's safe to overtake, and it will do the overtaking themselves. Or, again, since you have a destination in your navigation system, the car could tell you, oh, I need to take that exit right there, and it'll take the exit for you. Now, in the early access version, the driver could decide if the car would do the whole thing themselves, or if the cars were going to suggest you the lane change and you would still need to activate it yourself with the blinker stalk. At some point, it was actually the autopilot stalk, but they moved that in the early access version of the update. Now, with the official release, so a bunch of people have been saying that there was an early access release, but my information, based on, again, reliable sources, is that that's a first official wave, though Tesla is not commenting on it for some reason. And in that release, you still need to use the blinker. Now, I don't know what what the feature is, then, if you have to activate it. I mean, you see now, like if you see in the picture behind me, you'll see like the path planning inside the rendering of the car, which I guess is nice, but it's not much of a feature if you ask me. I don't know about you, Sam.
I mean, yeah, we're very slowly making our way to full autonomy. I guess like every step is a little one. I like, again, I don't quite understand the difference between, you know, the blinker stock stuff. So I think we're going to have to wait till it actually comes out and people start using it and taking videos of it.
Well, we've seen it in our early access already, and it made a lot of sense when it does it on its own, but when you have to actually activate it, it's much like when you're just on auto-steer and on the traffic over cruise control.
And maybe you only have to do it once, and you know, you're on a four-hour trip, and you just do it once, and then you're good. I don't know. I don't know how it's supposed to be set up.
No, every time that it's going to, well, the difference, it's going to suggest you lane change at least. So if you are too stupid to know when you should lane change lanes, then you have an autopilot system that's going to help you. Other than that, I don't know. A way that a lot of people have been talking about it is that you're going to be training the system, basically. You're going to, by validating each lane change, it's going to help the machine learning system to train. To train itself. I mean, that's a way to look at it, but that has been basically the case for a while now on a bunch of other features, but they were still added features for the drivers. This one, I mean, I don't know. But like you said, maybe we're going to try it and then, oh, we're going to see the value in it. So let's give it the benefit of the doubt. That update also has a few other features, especially for Model 3 owners. So V9, of course, introduced the whole, excuse me. That's not just for Model 3 owners. That's also for Model S and X. The V9 introduced a new UI that sort of brought the same experience from the Model 3 to Model S and X, which is like the sort of app launcher idea where you have a static app on the background and you launch an app as a sort of pop-up window over the whole screen. And apparently a big problem with people with that was the fact that some owners were using the backup camera nonstop when they were driving. Like, it was the main feature at the top of the screen, and still with the V9 now you only have the navigation in the background of the screen, and you could put like the music up, like you could get it like pretty up on the screen too, but that's pretty much it. If you want something else, it's going to be at the bottom, and for the reverse, it's going to be only when you put it on the reverse camera, it's only going to be in reverse. So apparently that was a big issue for a lot of people. It wasn't really for me, because my top app was always the navigation system. Like, I always want to see like the map and satellite or not, but I wanted to see the map even if I'm not using navigation, and like, you know where you are exactly. For some reason, it's enjoyable. But apparently there are a bunch of people that didn't like that, and they want absolutely to have the reverse camera. Did you ever use that?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of something like, you know, if I didn't want to keep looking at somebody's tailgating me or something, I would put it up. But, you know, normally I would just use it when you hit the reverse.
Yeah, me too.
It actually kind of made me seasick if I would leave it on. Not seasick or car sick or
motion sick.
Yeah, a little bit of weird. So. It was a weird, because like, you were going backwards and then you were looking at something going backwards.
The main issue with it, I think, is like the depth perception is not the same as like looking in your mirror.
It's like a wide angle lens, so it's kind of,
yeah. You shouldn't use that for that. I mean, unless it was just like a novelty thing, it was not the actual like driving feature. But I don't know. It was a big problem with a lot of people. Again, like I said, I just don't agree with the way it was used. But now, with that 2018.42 update on V9, what Tesla is doing is that now you can sort of pin apps on top of the music app, which you can move. So that means you can pin the reverse camera on top of this and have it covering, basically. Like, the back, my understanding is that the navigation system remains like always on at the on the back, but you can get the reverse camera on top of it, basically, which ends up the same result that I think those people wanted. So I think they're going to be fine with this one. Another thing that come with the update is improved regenerative braking. That's for Model 3. So that's what I was saying, just for Model 3. And that's pretty exciting, because I mean, I remember when I first tried the Model 3 back in July 2017 at the press event. Like, I was very excited. I was the first one of the first person to try the Model 3. But, and I was very impressed with the car. And my main complaint, if you look back to my article about it, was the fact that the regen felt weak. The force, the deceleration force, wasn't as strong as I was used to in my Model S. And they told me, what Model S do you have? Like, I have a PD5, 2012 PD5. So no, it should be exactly the same. And that's weird because like my motor is a lot stronger, like energy capacity is stronger. I wasn't convinced about that. And that was the rear-wheel drive version. So now they came out with the all-wheel drive version too. And now they are releasing a new software update. Over the air, they managed to increase the regen capacity of the car.
I'm really happy about this. It's like the one thing. So I have a Chevy Bolt, and it's the one thing there's a few things, but it's the one main thing that I dislike about driving the Model 3 or even the Model X versus the Chevy Bolt. Because the Chevy Bolt has significant regen, so you can, one pedal drive. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, it's got a paddle, which is almost like, hitting, stamping on the brakes. So you can do just about any stopping you could ever want, even on, steep downhills, with just the regen. Mm-hmm. And on the Model 3, there's significant regen, but like if you come to a stop sign, you're normally going to have to use the brakes, on a, 35 mile per hour road or whatever. Unless you start stopping, really early or, off ramps or whatever. It's just kind of annoying that you do have to use the brakes a little bit when, you could theoretically recoup all that energy through regen. So I haven't seen how much regen the new update's going to have, but I'm hoping it brings it kind of in line with the Chevy Bolt, at least, without the paddle kind of stuff.
Don't get too excited, though, because my main question, and again, I think Tesla is weird about that, I'm the only person reporting on that update. Yes, I'm reporting on with sources and everything. But my honest thing is that it's coming out. There's a lot of regular owners. I've done not just early access people. Yet Tesla is not commenting on the update. And our main question about it, of course, is it going to be just for all-wheel drive Model 3s? Or is it going to be both rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive Model 3s? Because we already knew that there was certainly a lot more potential in the all-wheel drive Model 3 to get to get more regen, because Tesla already confirmed with the track mode that was supposed to come out in the performance version that that track mode increased the regen capacity from 2 G's of 0.2 G's of deceleration to 0.3 G's of deceleration, which is a big difference, of course. But that's, of course, in the performance version, which is only all-wheel drive. So my question to Tesla was, is it going to be only for all-wheel drive or for both all-wheel drive and rear-wheel drive? And Tesla is not responding, just like they're not responding at all my other question about this update for some reason.
That's strange. And it's also strange that the all-wheel drive has the same regen capacity as the rear-wheel drive. You would think there would be a lot more. So maybe you're right. Maybe we're not going to see that much more or any improvement in the rear-wheel drive only one.
We're going to keep trying to get you a confirmation on that and check out Electrek for more information as soon as possible. Third thing about this update, for the Model 3, it has the support for the key fob. We've been talking for weeks about the key fob for the Model 3. It's coming out. The latest software also has the support for it, so that's great. We also learned from sources that Tesla ended out the first 100 key fob from Model 3 to a bunch of early access owners. So those people already have the key fobs, so it's already in production, at least in low volumes. But it's going to be something that you can purchase from Tesla directly, in addition to using your key card or your phone. But now you can have also a key fob. We don't know the price. That's another thing that we asked Tesla. Those things are going out. Tell us the way to buy them and the price. Tesla didn't want to respond to that either. If we look, though, at the price of the replacement key fob, they changed a lot over the years, but most recently, people have been quoted between $125 and $140 for replacement keys. So we expect similar prices for those. Quick comment from Elon Musk about the Model S and X interiors. They're going to be streamlined. Because God knows that there's way too many interior options for the Model S and X. People cannot decide between those crazy number of options, which are 5 and 2 if you are only for the premiums, 5 for all different models. And yeah, it's going to be streamlined to improve production, he says. He says, order before November 1st or you might not get one. Get the choice that you want, but again, not great communication from Tesla here. My first question was, can you at least tell us which one are going away so
exactly.
that if you says order before November 1st or you, the model you want maybe won't be available, yeah, but which one is going away so that we know? And they didn't want to tell us either. That's dumb.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's pulling the customer's chain a little bit, like they won't tell you which one's going away so that you get scared and order before November 1st. And also, like, why are they removing, like, you know, there doesn't seem to be any problem with the Model S or X
production.
Like,
been pretty stable at around 2,000 units, sometimes a little bit less, sometimes a little bit more, but around 2,000 units a week.
Yeah,
both cars combined.
You would think they would start opening up more options. And maybe that's what's going to happen on November 1st. Maybe there's going to be new colors or new, new option packages.
Maybe. We'll see. One thing, like a bunch of people on Twitter, like someone on Twitter, when we reported that, they took our article, they removed the headline, and they put a different headline in it, saying that Tesla confirms which interiors are going away. I think they said like the beige one and another one, like the textile and the beige, I think they said, which we never reported. Tesla never confirmed it to us or to anyone as far as I can tell, unless like it's maybe like a salesperson that told someone. But someone made it look like we got the confirmation and we put it on Twitter, and it was shared by a bunch of people, so on the forums and everything. So if you saw that, that's not coming from us. We don't know that for a fact. Don't know why someone would do that. That's a shitty thing to do. Maybe it looks like we are the one reporting this. Anyway. We already reported on the Gigafactory 3 stuff. Gigafactory 3. Porsche. We put the video up. Or one of our readers, Frank Cooperman. Sorry, I don't see his name here. Frank Corman, I think I pronounced his name correctly. Corman. He sent us a cool video where he spotted a bunch of Porsche taken prototype or test mules. We kept saying prototype. Well, they were prototypes, but I mean the bodies are completely camouflaged and with like sort of a Panamera inspired exterior, still has even the exhaust pipes on it, but they are very much all electric taken, subframe and powertrains in them. I spotted them in Italy in the famous, don't know how to pronounce that, the Stelvio Pass, is that it?
Stelvio Pass. Yeah.
Yeah, the whole winding roads that go up the mountain. And they were there. What was interesting about it is that they were there with a Model S PD5D. So they were benchmarking the Taycan against the Model S PD5D. Which, what I find most interesting about that is why the PD5D? That's like a three years old car at that point, is that?
Yeah, with the old,
2015?
The old Fascia.
It was released at the same time as the Autopilot. It was the D event.
Right, it's the original. It's the original D.
So 2014, right?
Yeah.
So that's a car that was released in 2014. It hasn't been in production for like 2 years, and they won the benchmark they're taking against that. I don't get it.
Well, they did have a newer Tesla there as well.
No. The newer Tesla is Frank's.
Oh.
Frank is a Tesla owner too, so he stopped there. But the black one is Frank's, and yeah, for sure Frank is a newer one. But no, the one driven by Porsche engineers, presumably benchmarking the Taycan against it, was the PD5D, the red one, the reddish one. This one here in the middle.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe they don't have that many Teslas in that. over there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, we reported to earlier today, like, Porsche is part, of course, of Volkswagen. And Volkswagen's CEO said in 2 years, we're going to have cars that can do everything that Tesla can do, but for half the price. I mean, they're really gunning for Tesla. They're really going after him, which I guess that's what you need to do if you're going electric. I mean,
okay, so they're saying that in 2 years, they're going to have a $25,000, 300-mile range electric vehicle for,
yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, it's going to have a charging network and fast zero, you know, 0 to 60 in 5 seconds, all that stuff. 2 years.
Neo, the sort of golf size car. I mean, maybe I hope so, but
yeah,
that's not like a Tesla competitor anyway.
The Golf isn't.
But yeah, my point was more like they're really like gunning for Tesla. They are. They keep referencing Tesla when they talk about their cars. And you said maybe they just don't have that many. That's why they took the PD5D. But you remember there's been a rumor going around for a while now about when Volkswagen purchased a bunch of Teslas, and I don't remember if it was the Model 3 or if it was the Model X, but they purchased one. And they brought it at their test site, and Tesla somehow managed to detect that the car was a test site because it wasn't supposed to be in Europe. Like, I don't remember if it was before the Model X was released in Europe or the Model 3, and they figured out, it's Volkswagen that has it. So it must have been the Model X because it was right after the Dieselgate scandal. So what they did, apparently, that's a rumor, and that's been going on in Germany, is that Tesla shut down the car and put a message on the screen, which I didn't know they were even able to push. And I don't remember what the message was, but it was something like taunting him over the diesel gate and the fact that now they needed to go electric and they were using Tesla to do some research. I don't know if that's a real thing, but I think it's funny. And they were clearly going after Tesla. That there's no doubt about that.
And there was some talk about Volkswagen buying Tesla when Tesla was going private.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, you're right.
That's all kind of interesting in context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. But apparently Elon shut that down pretty quickly. Finally, and that's not as good of news, but GM issued a press release this morning. And when I got it, I laughed out loud at the press release from GM. They are calling for a national zero-emission vehicles program. So like the ZEV program that you have in California, the credit for zero-emission program, basically that puts a mandate on automakers producing more EVs. They are calling for a national one in the U.S., they are saying that it's time for American leadership in zero emission vehicles, as if Tesla doesn't exist and there's no American leadership. But what bothers me the most about that press release is not that. That's just funny. But is the actual program that they are pushing for, which is a replacement of the fuel standard that they lobbied against recently. So, and if, like, I got a call as soon as I reported that, like last time from GM saying, we were not against the fuel consumption standard being stricter. We just don't like the way it's set up right now. We think that some cars should get different credit and whatever. I mean, okay, maybe you're right and everything, but that's not going to be the result of lobbying against the stricter standard. I mean, we're talking about Trump's EPA here. So
yeah,
Trump's EPA, if the automakers are saying we don't want those stricter standards, it's just going to pull them all together, which is exactly what they are talking about now. But they are taking comments for the new standard they're going to implement now. And GM's suggestion is a national zero-emission mandate. But it's a laughable mandate because they are talking about 7% zero-emission in 2021, then incremental 2% each year for 15% in 2015 and 2020-2025, I mean, and 25% in 2030.
Yeah, and like you said in the post, there's a lot of things wrong with that. Like, you know, there's 7 million long-range EVs on the road. by 2030 is extremely low. Like, that's probably what Tesla's going to do by itself. The, you know, 25%, like, by 2030, you know, our thinking is that all cars will be electrified at that point. There may be some,
All new cars.
And all new sales will be at least electrified.
It's going to be 100% electric, I'm sure.
I mean, you know, I mean, there's like the
production won't be there, but I mean, the demand for it, like every new buyers are going to want an all electric vehicle.
Absolutely.
At that point.
Absolutely.
You won't go to the dealership in 2030 and go, I want something that's powered by like little explosions of things that I need to dig out and going to cost me like, I don't know, like $4 a liter at that point.
Right. And, you know, at that point, there's going to be electric charging stations everywhere. Everybody's going to understand how to, you know, like wake up every morning with a full, you know, full range. Like there's a lot of things that are going to be kind of conquered by then. And, you know, like it's going to be like Norway, I think, at least.
Which is 50%, about 50% all electric, 60%
or 70,
plug-in right now.
70% plug-in, right?
Over 60, I don't remember exactly, but around 50 all electric and over 60.
Right. Plug-in. So, and that's today. You know, in 2020, it'll probably be even more towards 100%.
You're going to be close because in 2020, they're going to have the Model 3s, they're going to have the Audi e-tron, they're going to have like, they're going to have so many cars there.
Yeah.
They're doing it right now basically with Tesla's Model S and X, even the Imperial, I want to say. The Nissan Leaf is popular there. The BMW i3 was popular for a long time. The e-Golf was popular there. But those are not like, well, they're pretty good cars for what they're doing for the time now. But they weren't even like, they're nothing compared to the next generation of EVs that are coming right now.
Right. Yeah. And you know, Norway is obviously an edge case, but like, it's a good look at the future. Like, so you're talking about 12 years out. And GM is saying 25% cars need to, you know, will be electric. And that's just, to me, that's just like, it's actually insulting.
Yeah. And I mean, the way I framed the article was with China, if you compare it to China, which has a national zero emission mandate there. So if you want to compare it to a forward thinking country like the communist China, they have their own mandate, and they're pushing for 12% in 2020. So that they're 4 years ahead of what GM is suggesting. So what GM is suggesting would be not... We won't even try to catch up with China, which is killing it with EVs right now. And you have to think about what happened when China announced their more aggressive EV mandate. Every automaker out there started announcing that large investment to produce electric vehicles in China. So I know it's not the same thing as the US because, of course, the Chinese market is growing much faster. The auto market there is growing much faster than the US. But still, the US is still a very large car market. So people are going to announce giant electric vehicle factory in the US too if you have a stronger EV mandate. But of course, that's not what GM wants. First of all, I don't even get how a government would like take a proposal for an automaker, because they're basically like regulating themselves by proposing that. So well, of course they were gonna regulate themselves.
I mean, that's how the coal industry is kind of working right now. And it's kind of how the oil industry is working.
Yeah. So you know that GM is planning to have 7% of their cars being EV by, what is it, 2021? So they're not going to have to buy any credit because they are making their own rules right now.
Right. Basically, they're saying they're going to have 25% of their cars electric by 2030, which is crazy small. And they expect to still sell tons of Suburbans and their other big trucks that are, you know, gas using, which is crazy. Like, they have no plans to change, which to me signals, like, you know, the article, that GM is going to be at best a quarter the size it is right now in 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I ended the article. I ended it with GM wants to sell 25% of its cars electric in 2030, but in 2030, 100% of customers are going to want electric vehicles. So what's going to happen to the 75% of the customers that won't be able to buy one because they're all going to be sold out because the rest are going to be gas powered, and everyone, no one's going to touch that. I mean, and even right now, people, like, if you ask most people that are buying new cars right now, they are at least thinking about electric because they're thinking about the future. They're thinking about reselling the car. Good luck in just 3 or 4 years trying to resell like a non-collectible gas-powered car. Like if it's just like a Camry or something, the price is going to just completely drop, like a BMW 3 Series. It's going to be insanely cheap. I don't know.
Yeah, I wonder if there's going to be a lot of like companies electrifying gas cars, like just gutting the internal combustion engine drivetrain and throwing in some electric. I wonder if that's going to be a thing.
Like it seems so expensive right now when you look at the EV conversion. Like it's just so much labor extensive.
It is labor intensive. Yeah.
But I mean, to your point though, if someone makes like just is able to streamline it and make a kit that it's easily, especially if like battery costs decrease and you can have like smaller batteries and people start seeing more the value in not needing as much energy capacity as they think. Like not everyone. Like I have a 75 kilowatt hour battery pack, 74 kilowatt hour battery pack sitting in my driveway right now. And I use maybe like what?
Five?
10 kilowatt hour the whole week? This whole week.
Wow.
I use like, of course, I work at home, so it's not a good example.
We both work at home, so we're bad examples of that. But.
Yeah, but even then, like most people are going to use maybe, even if they just use 40, they use 40% in the whole day. But then they're able to charge every night, so I'm like maybe 40. Kilowatt hour, 50 kilowatt hours start to make sense. So I don't know. Maybe people are going to start to see more value in that. And if someone can streamline an EV conversion kit that is cheaper, but has, of course, a lower range. I don't know. Like I said, I did hear about a few startups working on that at some point, like selling kits for garages to be able to easily make EV conversion. But I doubt that it work out because like there's no easy EV conversion. It's a fairly simple process when you think about it, but in actual implementation, the cars are always different. So, like, there's so many models. I don't know. We'll see, I guess. That's about it for us, everyone. Thank you for tuning in this week, everyone that watched on YouTube. Please press that subscribe button. We are coming out with a bunch of new videos if you've been watching this week. We have our own Jeff Benjamin, which you guys mainly know for his 9-to-5 Mac videos. He's now started. He got his Model 3. Very happy he's in Model 3, and he's making some video about it now on Electrek. We have one on the Nomad wireless charger. He's got new stuff coming out every week. So subscribe to see more on top of the podcast. You can also subscribe on iTunes or your podcast app if you're on to just listen to us. Audio only and not have to watch our beautiful faces on YouTube. And you can go to patreon.com/electrek to support the podcast and the blog. That's always very much helpful. We have new stuff coming out there too with our t-shirt that have been coming out, our hoodies that have been shipping out, and we're going to try to work on new stuff as soon as possible. And we're going to see you next time, same time, same place next week. Ciao.